Welcome to the Inside Edge. I'm Bob McElligott, joined by Jody Shelley, and we are in Winnipeg, Manitoba. Is this close to the North Pole, or does it just feel close to the North Pole?
No, it's not even close, Bob. So imagine what it's like up there.
The Blue Jackets are going to take on the Winnipeg Jets tomorrow night. That's not the issue. The issue is what they did last night, falling in overtime to the Los Angeles Kings. 3-2 was the final score. A late goal in the third period for the Kings tied it. Then they win it in the overtime. But, Jody, the story of the night, Sergei Bobrovsky gets injured, and it happens with about 5.5 minutes left. He was the Blue Jackets' best player up until that point. He goes out of the game. Curtis McElhinney comes in. So there are two things. The status on Sergei Bobrovsky as of today, and was the game lost when he had to leave?
You know, that's... I love your second point. No, the game was not lost with the 5:35 when Curtis McElhinney went in. It was a 2-1 game to that point, but opportunities were available earlier for the Columbus Blue Jackets to put the LA Kings away. And LA Kings, they traveled the day before from the West Coast, three time zones. They get in and they play this game. They were waiting for an excuse to be pushed out of the building, and the Blue Jackets let them hang around. They got a 2-goal lead early. They let LA hang into that 2-1, and it was dangerous, and the LA Kings, they're a powerhouse. And when they have a sniff in the third period, it doesn't matter who's in net, they're going to rumble. And when McElhinney goes in, he knew what was coming. He knew they were going to rumble even more, because if they sense any weakness, any kind of chink in the armor, they're going to attack. That's what they are. That's what they can feed on. So you felt the momentum gone there, but Bob, I thought earlier it would have been a great thing for the Blue Jackets to get that extra padding, that extra cushion. Now, the status of Bobrovsky, we've just found out that he is out for the next 3 weeks with a lower body injury. There were reports that it was an upper body, but it's been confirmed that it's a lower body, and it's just 3 weeks, which I think is good news, Bob. I don't know about you. I mean, last year he went down with a lower body, and he was out for a couple months. This is a good sign. I think it's a terrible loss to Bobrovsky, but we know how John Tortorella feels about Curtis McElhinney. We know how the team plays in front of Curtis. If it's just for 3 weeks, we'll take it.
And John Tortorella was asked earlier today what he thinks about the play of Curtis McElhinney, both last night and looking ahead.
He's played good, and I feel very comfortable. Hell of a spot last night. We're in our end zone the whole game, and he knows it's coming when he steps in there. Because that wasn't changing. The wave had already drowned us. Hell of a spot. At first, but then he got a save in his chest. That's all he needed. He made a great glove save, has no chance on the winning goal. So I like the way he responded in a very difficult situation, and he's played well. So we're very comfortable with him in net, and we'll go there.
So he's got confidence in his goaltender, as well he should. And one thing, you brought this up to me about a week ago, when he talks about his goaltending, just in regular press conferences, always mentions both guys. And Curtis McElhinney hasn't played very much for him. This is exactly why you do it, because he's still involved. He's part of the team, and now he's going to be a big part of the team.
Isn't that interesting leadership, though? Think about that. How many coaches, it's never talked about that second guy, the guy that's in practice every day, the guy that is battling to be ready. Curtis McElhinney, I saw him this morning, and he brought out a good point. Couldn't have been on the bench any longer to go into that game. 5 minutes and 35 seconds. Sure, he could have been. But the game was in the infancy of the game. Or sorry, it was in the back half of that game. It was over. And here he is. He's had two intermissions. He's sat on the bench for the entire 15 minutes, almost 15 minutes of the third period. And then he gets the tap to go in. I mean, that is... And there he goes in and does a great job. He made some big saves. He got attacked. But here's what. I like the way Tortorella does that, because it's all about the team. It's all about every single individual, and that's got to feel good for Curtis McElhinney.
Every year since Curtis McElhinney has been here, there's always rumblings in the summertime. Can't you find a more experienced or a bigger name backup goalie? Listen, Curtis McElhinney understands his role. He knows exactly what he has to do. He knows how he has to do it. He knew the situation last night. You're absolutely right. Didn't even flinch. He's a great teammate. He's a great partner for Sergei Bobrovsky, and he gets thrust into the limelight now, and that's okay because he's been there for a couple of years in a row. I love having this guy as part of this team.
experience, and there are teams in the league in this situation that don't know what to do. They would love to have a guy, and I'm sure they called on a guy like McElhinney when their number one went down, because the experience that he has, the if you have to throw in a rookie or someone you're not sure of, hey, that's a whole other step downwards. You're making a little step downwards, but you're confident in that leadership.
Jonas Korpisalo has come up from the Lake Erie Monsters and will work with Curtis McElhinney. Coming up on the show, we're going to break down this game and this team even further. In the next segment, we'll hear from a Hockey Hall of Famer, and there's big news in the league, all coming up as the Inside Edge continues on 97.1 The Fan. Welcome back to the Inside Edge. I'm Bob McElligott, joined by Jody Shelley. We talked in our first segment about the Blue Jackets' loss last night to the Los Angeles Kings in overtime, 3-2. Jody, let's get to the broader picture here of this Blue Jackets team and the ups and the downs, the peaks and the valleys. They're trying to smooth it out. I guess the biggest question that I have, and earlier today on my CBJ and 30 podcast, I posed this question. Maybe you can help me with it. The core of this team, to me, is still the same core that found a way to win in the second half 2 years ago and get into the playoffs and challenge the Pittsburgh Penguins. This core is still the same core that went 15-1-1 down the stretch last year. And I know that there was nothing to lose there because they were already out of the playoffs, but they were able to beat anybody at the time. Now, how does a team go from being like that to being so fragile? Is an easy word to use, but I don't know what other word to use. I mean, how do you go from being world beaters to being not quite dominated but taken advantage of so easily?
Well, Bob, you know, here we sit on a day of disappointment again with this Blue Jackets outcome last night. So it's easy to be critical, but I think it's even easier not to be critical. You know, this team now is in a situation where you're in a 2-1 game last night at home. That should have been more. You should have more production in the midpoint of that game. This Blue Jackets team could have used a guy like Saad or Johansson or Hartnell or Foligno to step up and contribute with a goal. Anyone. Defenseman, Ryan Murray. But it didn't happen, so it's 2-1 late in the game. Bobrovsky gets hurt. Now you have an excuse. Not that they used it, but I was thinking when I was driving home last night, you know, you look at the L.A. Kings, and I feel like they're a brick house. You know, remember the Three Little Pigs? And when I look at the Blue Jackets, there's moments that they're between the wooden house and the brick house, and there's times they're between the wooden house and the straw house. And right now I feel like they're, honestly, it's like that straw house. It's like they're, you know, any kind of breeze is going to blow them off track. And that to me relies on leadership. And I think that, you know, we can sit here and say what happened. Well, listen, I go back to the beginning of the season. Expectations, and every one of us is guilty of this, me and you included. This was a great team. The Brandon Saad trade was fantastic. We were excited. We had some swagger. We thought this was going to be scripted to be perfect. Unfortunately, the New York Rangers came in and put a dent into this start of the season, and then Buffalo made the dent a little bigger, and then it just snowballed, and then confidence was lost. We thought when Bobrovsky was going to get back on track, this team would get back on track. They seemed to. Listen, and it's not all lost. I just think that, yeah, there's questions that have to be answered. Leadership is one of them to me, and it's puck management during the game. It's turnovers in the neutral zone when you're up 2-1. If you're a rookie and you make the mistake, it's one thing. But when you have veterans making those plays, it's unacceptable. They know that. You know, long in shifts, it's hard to think and make clear decisions, and that's an excuse. But leadership needs to bear down in those moments and lead the way. And I just don't feel it's there right now. I think that that's part of what's going on. This core group, I think that you look at this group in the offseason to do what they did last year, but then grow. Take the step. Everyone needs to take a step in a young organization. It's hard every year. And I don't know if guys have taken that step enough. And it's disappointing today, and they've got to get things going.
Yeah, it is disappointing. And one of the guys that you talked about is Brandon Saad. When he came here, you're right. I remember the day, June 30th, he gets traded. And I thought it was Christmas Day, not the 30th day of June, because it was a great asset that the Blue Jackets were picking up. And we have seen him in flashes of brilliance this year, but we haven't seen sustained brilliance. You were just talking about expectations. For Brandon Saad, are there two expectations for him? Number one, from the team, everybody expecting it to be extremely good. But number two, personally, expectations for him to come here, elevate his game, two-time Stanley Cup winner already at the age of 22, somehow elevate his game, become a leader, and make this team great. Are those expectations to some extent crushing him a little bit right now?
I don't know him personally at all, but, I mean, he's only been a part of teams that have had success. And as far as the Chicago Blackhawks and riding shotgun with those guys, this is a different animal for him right now. You know, he came to a team with a lot of promise, but that promise is gone. And so for him now, as we look to him to be that guy, maybe we're being unjust. We're being unfair. That's not his role. He's a young man who's had success and been on winning teams, but that doesn't mean he can stroll in here and have the strut and really implement his personality. I know it's hard. It's hard to do that. And I don't know if his teammates can rely on him to do that right now. That seems unfair. I'm looking at the older veterans to say, hey, this is how it's got to be. And I know I think Boone Jenner has done a heck of a job as a player. I think Savard and Johnson have been consistent. You know, people talking about that turnover by Savard and that goal last night. That's not where that goal was given up. It was in the neutral zone on a turnover by Scott Hartnell and Nick Foligno in the neutral zone. And those guys can't be doing that. They know it. And that's just a fact of life. So, but consistency in the lineup, consistency in practice, consistency in games. I can see John Tortorella's frustration in this whole situation because, you know, coming off the Flyers game, Bob, I felt pretty good about this team. You did too. But when I look back, Flyers played poorly. Let's be honest. That was a poor outing by the Flyers, and the Blue Jackets thought they were, you know, they did a good job. They jumped all over them. You would have liked to have seen that continuation into last night's game, and it's not there, and that's where the frustration comes in.
As you were just talking about that, I was thinking, Brandon Dubinsky, John Tortorella always talks about how he can drag guys into the fight, and he can. And he's playing on a line with Ryan Johansson, sometimes at center, sometimes on the wing. But when I sit here and think about it, in the last couple of games, he's been okay. But when you speak of leadership, is he doing enough? I guess the answer is no, but him, Scott Hartnell, Nick Foligno, these older guys, are we still sitting in a situation where we're waiting to see who's going to step up, who's going to be the guy, not just today, not just tomorrow, not just the day after, but every day, day in, day out?
Let's go back to last year, and we talked about this team, and when they had success, we were so excited to talk about how they did it by committee. They scored goals by committee. They led by committee. They won by committee. It was that type of group, and right now it looks like they've individualized, and it has to do with the bad start. I think that this team has got to figure out a way to lead together, help each other lead. You do it right, and I'll do it right. We know what the right way is. Let's all do it together, and the rest of the group will follow. Well, right now it seems like individuals are on their own page. Frustration in their individual game is leading over to individual play instead of having that team concept all throughout the lineup. It's not there, and you're seeing guys like Carlson, Wenberg, and Jenner, the young core of this team, Calvert, do things kind of the right way and lead, where you have to have your best players being those guys. And that's what I think has happened to this team. Losing, guys have gone separate ways. They need to get back on the same page, do it the way they did last year, and as a group by committee.
All right, I've got to ask you this question since you put it that way, and I still think this was the right move, but when they were leading by committee, there was no bona fide captain on this team. There wasn't. And now there is. And for 3 years, people clamored, you need a captain, you need a captain, you need a captain. And they all said, well, we're all captains. We can get it done. And that's exactly what they did. Has that changed the dynamic in any way, shape, or form?
Honestly, it could have. And it's not a disrespect or a takeaway from Nick Foligno, because he's the right guy for the captaincy. But there's other guys that think they should have been the captain, and maybe that has affected it. I don't think so, and now we're speculating because we're not in the room, but I could see that being an issue. And listen, when you're losing, everything's an issue. So we can have these discussions when they're losing. We wouldn't have had it 48 hours ago after the Flyers game, but today, as we sit, we need more. Expectations need to be higher. These guys need to be drug into the fight themselves. They need to be called out. They need to look in the mirror. And that's just the reality of the situation they're in.
Also, the defense. It's played well. Jack Johnson, David Savard, they're putting up almost 30 minutes a game, doing what they're asked of, and then a little bit more. But the one thing they're not getting from the blue line, and we've talked about this the last several weeks, scoring. There's not much scoring coming from the blue line. That could alleviate a lot of things if they could get that, wouldn't it?
There's no scoring in the league, really, as people say, and they talk about that stuff. But, yeah, it could alleviate. Anything could. If you're a top player playing against top defensemen and your third line or fourth line scores a goal, guess what? You got some bricks taken off your shoulder. That's teamwork. That's by committee. That's what this team needs to do. Yeah, these guys that think they're just riding shotgun have got to realize that they need to be more than riding shotgun. They have an opportunity against weaker D, weaker forwards, maybe to create something, whether it's momentum, maybe it's drawing a penalty. There's chipping in different ways. And these guys now, and I think the individual thing, we might be on something here, because I see guys when I'm down between the benches really caring about what they did and maybe someone not doing for them rather than just, hey, our team, our group.
John Tortorella is the consummate leader, and we've talked about this ad nauseum. You played for him. But even being as strong of a personality as he is, what can he do? What can anybody behind the bench do to get rid of that individualism and get it back to the collective mentality?
It's up to the group. It's up to the guys to realize that, hey, I need you to help me. You need me to help you. And we're in this together. And, you know, it sounds easy to talk about, but it's up to those guys. And it's the greatest part about being on a team. It's the definition of team. It's galvanizing. It's saying, hey, forget this. Forget you being worried about no goals. Forget you and the press you're getting. It's us. When you get affected, I get affected. We're in this together, and we're only going to get out together. It's a developmental thing. It's a thing they've got to realize, and their focus needs to be on the team. And right now, it's not.
And when it's not, you see the results, kind of what happened last night. And as you said, and this is, take it all in context, because you lose last night, that's where it's easy to come in today and just kind of rip it all apart. Nothing's good. You always say it. The food tastes better when you win. The rides are more comfortable when you win. But when you lose, it's all on the flip side. And today, unfortunately, we're on that flip side.
And it's the reality of it. Listen, we want this team to do well. We want every guy out there to have a great game, a great time in Columbus, and win for the right reasons. And we keep reading articles. The coach said he's embarrassed. The players are upset. They went through a hard practice today. Listen, that's not what this game is about. It's about having success and living up to expectations. So, yeah, days like this are going to happen. They feel worse than we're expressing right now. The coach is being way harder on them. They're being harder on themselves. It's not a good environment at home. Listen, they're going to get on the road tomorrow. They're going to go into a hostile environment and try to make this better, because these days are the days you don't like being an NHL hockey player. So, and that's part of this business.
Yeah, that's a good point. We feel bad. We had nothing to do with it, and we can't change it. Maybe that's why we feel bad. Maybe that's why you feel bad, too, because you're just sitting in the stands, and you can't – there's nothing tangible you can do to grab a hold of it and switch it.
And we aren't whiners. We're not whining about the team. We just need to express reality here with what we feel and what we see, because we're close to it. So I think that this – it's something that we've identified. I think it's a conversation. And I think these guys are having more in-depth but much more realistic and honest conversation.
Yes, absolutely. No question about that. Well, stay tuned. Coming up next on the Inside Edge, I'm going to sit down and talk with a bona fide Hall of Famer. You want to know who it is? I'll just wait till the other side of the break here on 97.1 The Fan. Welcome back to the Inside Edge. I'm Bob McElligott with Jody Shelley. Yesterday, I had a chance to sit down with an actual Hall of Famer. Now, they don't come along all that often. But I'll tell you what's even more special about this guy. 35 years ago, he joined the Los Angeles Kings, and that's where he has been for his entire career. Nick Nixon is the radio play-by-play voice of the Kings, and just a couple of weeks ago, he was honored when he got the Foster Hewitt Award, inducting him to the Hockey Hall of Fame. I had a chance to catch up with him yesterday before the Blue Jackets took on the Los Angeles Kings and asked him about that experience of being inducted into the hallowed hall.
Well, it was a great thrill, obviously, and I think when you consider who votes and nominates people for the award, it's a jury of your peers, so to speak. So having been named by a lot of the individuals that I've worked with and currently work with in the NHL broadcasting business, that made it rather special. And it was a great 2 days in Toronto back in early November. The Hall of Fame people, Chairman Lanny McDonald, Kelly Massey, who did a lot of the logistical work, the Kings organization, Luke Robitaille was there, our CEO, Kelly Cheeseman as well. So it was 2 days. It was a whirlwind, but certainly 2 days that that we'll never forget and very grateful for.
35 years with the Kings organization. You know, it's hard to stay anywhere for a long period of time in any job now. Do you ever sit and look back and think, man, how have I been able to stay here for so long? And think about all of the experiences you've had with just this one franchise.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I alluded to at the luncheon when I gave my speech was I've been proud of the fact that I've been loyal to basically one organization for as long as you mentioned, 35 years. Seen a lot of changes. I mean, the growth of the sport in Southern California and certainly throughout the United States. I mean, when I broke in 1981 with the Kings, our closest U.S. opponent was St. Louis. And then our nearest opponent was Vancouver. So our shortest plane ride was like 2.5 hours for a road game. So, and now you've got three teams in California, the expansion wave from the early 90s, which, of course, includes Columbus and the Sun Belt team. So a big change league-wide in that regard. And then for the Kings franchise, 88, Gretzky comes, puts the team and really the game more so on the map in North America, in the United States. And it's just grown from there. Youth hockey programs have flourished. And it's to the point now where it's the hottest ticket in L.A. And fortunately, we've won a couple of Stanley Cups the last couple of years in 2012 and 2014. But they sell out every night. They've sold out for almost 5 straight years. And like I said, it's come a long way since 1981 when fans used to buy tickets in the upper bowl for $4. And then after the first period, to sit down by the glass and nobody would care less.
Yeah, and I think that for people outside of L.A., maybe they don't realize just how popular the Kings are there because you always hear about the Lakers. The Clippers have been better in recent years. You've got the Dodgers. There's plenty of competition. But the Kings fans, they've really been there throughout, haven't they?
Yeah, they really have. It's been a diehard group. And the fan base has been cultivated and it's grown over the years to where, as I said, we now sell out every game. And it's interesting because when I arrived there 35 years ago, that was, I think, the year after Magic Johnson was drafted by the Lakers. And, of course, Magic in the decade of the 80s with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and James Worthy won quite a few championships. And then they turned it over and they got Shaq and Kobe and they won some more championships. And I always said, if the situation was reversed where the Kings were winning all the championships and the Lakers were struggling all those years, it would be known more as a hockey town than a Lakers town. I mean, the Lakers still rule the roost, even though they're not very good. And I'm being kind, believe me when I tell you that. But, you know, winning cures all the ills. And to have competitive teams for the past 4 or 5 years and winning the first two Stanley Cups in franchise history, it has made it a more popular sport. So the casual fan now will go to a couple of games. And as you know, having followed hockey for so many years, you get that fan to a couple of games, you get them hooked. And then they're lifers. And that's what's happened in L.A.
Once you're there for 25, 30 years and there's no championships, I know you enjoy your job and you come to work and love the game, but does it ever creep into your mind, I wonder if we'll ever get one while I'm here? I wonder if I'll ever have that experience.
Yeah, absolutely. Bob Miller, who joined the Kings in, I think, 1973, he's been there 8 years, 9 years more than I have. Our ex-trainer, Peter Demers, we would get on the planes after losses on the road throughout the years and just look at each other and shake our heads and go, we're never going to see it, are we? We're never going to get the ring. We're never going to see it. But, you know, and as it turned out, it came rather unexpectedly because in 2012, we barely got into the playoffs. We were the 8th seed. And the way it was structured back then, 8 played the first seed in the first round. We beat the first seed that year, Vancouver. Then we get the second seed. We sweep St. Louis. We get the third seed, and we took out Phoenix, as they were known a couple of years ago, in five games. And all of a sudden, you're in the Stanley Cup final against New Jersey. And it's funny because I don't think the Devils were rated as high as the three teams we beat before we got to the Stanley Cup final that year. And it was just a magical ride. I mean, the 10 straight wins on the road to start the playoff run. They were up 3-0 in every playoff series, which has never been done before. And they never faced an elimination game, obviously. So it came totally out of the blue. And the way they did it, I don't think we're ever going to see any team do again.
And the good thing about your job calling the games on radio is you don't get bumped for a national guy once you get into the second round of the playoffs. You got to call it all the way through the Stanley Cup win.
Yeah. And, you know, TV, of course, rules. But that is, I guess, maybe the only advantage that radio has in the National Hockey League is you can continue to do the playoffs when the local TV can't after the first round. It was special. And, you know, we had been to the finals before back in 1993, lost to the Montreal Canadiens that year in five games. But, you know, up until I think it was about 5 or 6 years ago now, going back the 2 years before we won the Cup in 2012, we had a long stretch where we never hardly made the playoffs. And those are the games I really missed. There's nothing like NHL playoff hockey. I mean, even if you're an eighth seed and you don't think you're going to go very far, just the intensity of the games, every play is scrutinized. Every play, every little play could make a difference in a game and a series, as it would turn out. So it's great. It's great that the Kings have been able to play all of these exciting playoff games. They had 62 playoff games over that three-year stretch, 2012, 13, and 14, and I don't think any team, maybe 64 games, 62 or 64, the most that any team has ever played over a three-year stretch. So, those are games that I know the players and the fans live for, and believe me, the broadcasters live for as well.
Nick Nixon, the radio play-by-play voice of the Los Angeles Kings and a member of the Hockey Hall of Fame. It's a long way for a guy from Rochester, New York, to go to Los Angeles, California, but it's an even longer trek to get into the Hockey Hall of Fame. Coming up next, Jody and I are going to talk about some things going on in the league. One team in the Metropolitan Division has lost a player, and I'm not talking about losing a player for just a week or a month. They've lost a player for good, and it's a very influential player for them. Also, the Florida Panthers got some good news this week. All of that and more as the Inside Edge continues here on 97.1 The Fan. Welcome back to the Inside Edge. Bob McElligott and Jody Shelley getting ready to close out today's edition. The Blue Jackets in Winnipeg getting set to take on the Jets for the second and final time this regular season. That'll be tomorrow night. Jody, before we get to the league stuff, you know, it's funny. I used to come to Winnipeg when it was in the American Hockey League, when it was the Manitoba Moose, which, by the way, has returned here. But this used to be one of the prime spots to come to in the American League because it was a former NHL city. And you went there, and the hotel was great, and the rink was great. And we used to come here and play two games, so we'd be here 3-4 days at a time. And even though it's the coldest place on the planet, it was a fun place to be. Now you come here in the NHL, and you go, well, this hotel isn't as nice as one in Dallas. But one thing that hasn't changed, they've never lost their love for this team in Winnipeg. And the fan base is supportive. It's loud. And it's a fun city to visit for a couple of days, isn't it?
Bob. Beautiful hotel, you're in Canada, and I remember in the American League, it took a flight to get there. So you get to go on an airplane for once, and you get to stay the night. There's a lot of great things in Winnipeg, and boy, do they love their hockey. So much that you mentioned the Moose is back. They're one of the few cities in the NHL that has an NHL team and an AHL team. So they don't get hockey once in a while or 41 times a year. They get it over 70 times a year at home.
And the reason that they did that, it was twofold, actually. They had their American Hockey League team in St. John's, Newfoundland, which it's very difficult to get players when you need them at the spur of the moment. It's impossible to get them from the Rock on the spur of the moment. So they moved it for that reason. And the other reason is they've only got a little bit more than 15,000 seats in this building. There are way more people that want to see hockey, professional hockey in Winnipeg, than 15,000. So this kind of allows them, those that can't get to the NHL games or can't afford it or can't get a seat, whatever it is, they can still come see the Moose.
Right, and it's still an intimidating place. They rock this place for the American Hockey League games too. So interesting dynamic being an American – think about this, being an American Hockey League player in an NHL city. I see a lot of perks there.
Yeah, tons of perks, as a matter of fact. Ask the well, it's probably a better situation than San Jose has going on, where they have their American Hockey League team playing in their building. But I'm going to go out on a limb and say the cost of living is probably a little bit more manageable in Winnipeg. What do you think?
Slightly. San Francisco Bay is one of the, it's got to be top in the world for as far as living. So on that American League salary, there's probably six or seven guys living together.
Back to the, just like back in the old days, yeah. Right, in the lower levels of the minor leagues. Let's talk about what's going on in the NHL. One of the teams in the Metropolitan Division, a rival of the Blue Jackets, the Pittsburgh Penguins, lost a player yesterday. Not lost him for a week, month, a year, forever. Pascal Dupuis announced his retirement yesterday, 36 years old. He had blood clot issues last year that had him miss almost the entire year. Came back this year, played. I remember telling you a couple of weeks ago off the air, this guy needs to just stop playing before he gets himself really injured or worse on the ice. And I don't say that in a bad way. You just want to see guys take care of themselves. It's unfortunate, but he's had a couple of other health scares now and decided it's time to hang it up. You know, you got to a point where it was time to hang it up. I'm sure it's a very tough decision, but even more so when you still think you can play.
Well, and you know, the situation with your health, it's just hats off to him and the organization of the Pittsburgh Penguins to identifying that, hey, you've got a long life ahead of you with a beautiful family and a healthy family, and you need to step away from this game, which you've had so much success from. The game has given you, hockey has given you so much. You need to take time now and enjoy and appreciate it. And, you know, I've heard nothing but great things about Pascal Dupuis. I've only seen him in the hallways a few times, never interacted with him much. Thought he was hard to play against all the time. And I've heard nothing but great things. He's going to be fine off the ice. It's going to be a transition, obviously. It always is. But he's going to feel relieved to know that, you know, he can take a step back and lead a healthy life and not worry about the things that come with this hockey game, the unknowns. And, you know, some organization's going to be really lucky to have him because he's a guy that's won. He's a guy that his teammates love being around. The young players learn a lot from him, and he's a pro. So for all that, I know that he'll thrive wherever he goes.
And I would imagine that team is going to be Pittsburgh. They're going to keep paying his salary. He's got a contract through next year. And I saw a quote from Jim Rutherford, their general manager, yesterday saying, "The decision has always been his. However, we're pleased that he's made this decision just because he's got four kids. Like you said, he's a family guy, and you don't want to see somebody push themselves to a point that they don't need to go to. He's won a Stanley Cup, and he's been great for that team. In fact, if you go back and look at the trade, he was traded, 2008, I think it was, when the Penguins made a deal with the Atlanta Thrashers at the time. He was a throw-in guy. He was a sidecar to a guy named Marian Hossa. Yeah. Who's the guy that they wanted to try to take them to the promised land. Of course, they went to the final. They lost to Detroit. Hossa then left and went to Detroit the next year, and Dupuis and the Penguins won the cup. But who would have thought when they made that trade, you'd look back 6-7 years later and say the best player they got was Pascal Dupuis.
And remarkable how he fit in with Sidney Crosby. His speed, his awareness, you know, and we talk about it all the time. It, you know, you think that you play with one of the best players in the world, you got it made. They're going to make you better. Maybe in the defensive position, when you look at Niedermeyer and Boschman, Pronger, the players he made better in Philadelphia, Braden Coburn's one of them that comes to the top of my mind. But up front, you've got a big responsibility, and they demand a lot from their wingers as far as Crosby. When he wants to get the puck, what you do when you get the puck, where he wants you to put it. And Dupuis, with his speed and his physicality and his smart, his awareness, complimented Crosby very well. And immediately when he came back from this injury this year, right away they just connected again. Short stint back, he proved to himself by working out and working his way back from those blood clots last year to get back in the NHL. That's a big deal. He had an impact, and now he can step away and enjoy what he's got.
one of those, look, I gave it my all. I came back, and now I really know I just can't do it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what you want to do. There's the worst thing in life is unknowns. That's what we're afraid of. Every human is afraid of the unknowns. And, you know, he's got unknowns as far as his health, and then he's not sure at moments when will he ever play again when he gets diagnosed last year. Well, guess what? He works at it. He tears down that wall, gets back to it, and feels good about it, and then he makes that decision while he's back in the game. I think that's important for him in this transition.
Another team got good news this week. The Florida Panthers, they were looking for a vote in Broward County so that they could get some funding. I don't want to say assistance. That doesn't sound right. Everybody's making deals. They wanted a deal to make sure they could stay in Sunrise, Florida through 2028. They got the votes that they needed. They needed 5 out of 8. They got the first 5 votes off the board. So they're good, and that gives them even more stability. This is a franchise that people have always been questioning every time something comes up and there's a city looking for an NHL team. The Florida Panthers come up immediately. One of their owners yesterday, I read on Twitter, he said, look, I don't speak French. I'm not interested in going to Seattle or Kansas City, because Quebec and Seattle and Kansas City are the 3 cities that always come up. He says, we're staying here. That is great for them. They put together a good on-ice product. Now they can get more comfortable.
Yeah, and just think about it. Now, we sit here in Columbus, Ohio, and I feel better about the Florida Panthers already. You know, when you walk into an arena or you look at an organization that is not solid in the community, not the unknown again, where are they going to go? Are they going to be here next year? It's just not stable. Now when we look at them, it's like, all right, commitment, long term. The community must feel great about them now. I feel great about them now because you know what? They're going to be there. And how about the players that are there? We're Florida Panthers today. It's like the movie The Chiefs. Who owns the Chiefs and where are we going? We could be going down to Florida. Yeah, right. No, Florida's going to stay in Florida, which is a great thing. And their players now, with the confidence that the ownership and the town has put into this organization, it's a wonderful thing. A lot of Canadians, a lot of Americans that are from up north where the snow flies all December, January, February, March, and April, they enjoy a hockey game in the summer. It's a solid thing. And Peter Lukow, who was in Philadelphia, we got to meet him last year when he was in when we were down in Florida. He's done an exceptional job in pushing this in the right direction.
Yeah, he's the president of that team and came with great credentials, as you said, from the Philadelphia Flyers. I might not care about this so much if I didn't have an attachment now, but Gerard Gallant's the head coach there. Derek McKenzie is playing there, and it would be a story, and I would talk about it, but I probably wouldn't feel as good about it for that franchise if I didn't have those two guys who I like and respect.
See, I felt good about it, and I forgot about those guys. So that tells you even more. Now it's
yeah, they're really good buddies of yours. Yeah.
And I like the mix, man. They've got some of, if not the best, young talent in the NHL. And I'm talking about Bjugstad, Barkov. They've got older leadership, 6 or 7 guys over the age of 34 years old. Think about that here in Columbus. They've got McKenzie. They've got Willie Mitchell. They've got, oh, yeah, that guy Jaromír Jágr that's such an experienced fellow. So they've got a good mix of young youth and older veteran players, and that is even more exciting for that organization. Good for them. We're happy for them.
Good veteran players that have been winners in their career. And finally, let's talk about Alexander Semin. Alexander Semin was a Washington Capital for a long time, and now he's bounced around the league. He went to Carolina last year. They signed him to a 1-year deal. After about 6 months, they said, enough of this. We're not even interested anymore. He goes to Montreal this year, and they are disenchanted is a nice way to put it, as what they are with him. You know, I was talking with Chris Clark, who's the Blue Jackets Director of Player Development, in between periods last night, and he was talking about Alexander Semin, and he said, you know, at one point, he was a better player than Alex Ovechkin, in my opinion. He said he was a really smooth skater, he had really great hands, but he's just missing one intangible to take him over the top, and that's the reason guys start bouncing around, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's kind of the dedication, the resiliency, the heartbeat. And you wonder if this kid, he's done now. He's done in the NHL. He could be done in the NHL unless someone else picks him up. He's been put on unconditional waivers. It looks like he's heading back to the KHL. You know, these guys in Russia, their dream is to play in the NHL still. But now he'll go back there and find a home. It's bigger ice. They know what he is. He's got the skill. And it's really too bad because the passion. Where's the passion from Semin? If he dialed it up, I'm telling you, Ovechkin and the way he plays and when he scores goals, how fun is it to watch him celebrate? He loves what he's doing, and he works hard to do it, and he runs guys over. If Semin did that, and I love that comment you said about Chris Clark saying he could have been or should be the next Ovechkin, or could have been Ovechkin, that's awesome. It's just disappointing to hear that he's done over here and heading back to Russia.
Well, as the saying goes, you don't buy groceries on potential. You got to go out and do the job, right?
That's right. I've never heard that before.
All right, see, you learned something today. One more thing. The NHL Board of Governors got together. They changed the rules on the compensation for executives going from one team to another team. This is the rule that bit the Blue Jackets. They signed John Tortorella from the Vancouver Canucks. He was still under contract. He had been fired, but he's under contract. They had to give up a second-round pick to the Canucks. The Board of Governors has looked at that, and they said, okay, look, this isn't working. And that's great. But it's not retroactive, which means the Blue Jackets still have to give up their draft pick. So that stinks. And to make it twice as stinky, if Todd Richards were to get a job somewhere now, the Blue Jackets get zero compensation. So they fixed it, but it's not helping this team at all. Did you like that?
I think twice as stinky is stanky, isn't it?
Yeah, that could be.
Oh, that's great. Now, that's disappointing because you look at that rule as it comes in, yeah. The Blue Jackets this year giving up a second-round pick to get John Tortorella. That's fine. I get it. But if the rule is now gone, what if they give up? What if Todd Richards finds a job here in the next few months?
Nothing.
Yeah, well, there you go. They're getting it on both ends, which is too bad. I agree with the rule. Should have never been that way in the first place. A coach gets fired. He's fired. You don't want him. Why the heck are you owed a second-round pick? So Blue Jackets getting hosed on that on both ends, and it's too bad, especially we know the value of picks of Jarmo Kekalainen, the former scout, especially a second-round pick.
Yeah, but I'll tell you something. As we go down the road with this team, that might be the best second-round pick they ever had. There is the potential for that, right?
I totally agree with that. John Tortorella is a first-round pick.
All right, Blue Jackets playing in Winnipeg here tomorrow night, 8 o'clock start. I'll be on the radio right here on 97.1 The Fan and on the Blue Jackets Radio Network, and you'll be able to see Jody on Fox Sports Ohio. That'll do it for this week's edition of The Inside Edge. For Jody Shelley, I'm Bob McElligott. Thanks for listening to 97.1 The Fan.